Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly 3/4 of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, I'm Matt Chorley, and this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. Coming up on today's episode, it's PMQ's Unpacked, the last one for 3 weeks, because they're clearing off for the Easter recess. So as a special end-of-term treat, instead of wheeling in the big telly to watch Jurassic Park, we're wheeling in comedian Jeff Norcott. He joins Tim Shipman and me to pause the action during the PMQs to analyse the key exchanges in real time. Llama Spirit rounds up the best of the rest. Before that, in The Economists, Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton on why Labour politicians can't stop talking about Margaret Thatcher and the politics of the dishwasher. Keir Starmer wades into the big political battleground. And if you like what you hear on the podcast, don't forget you can join me for Politics Without the Boring Bits live on Times Radio, on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. That's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10. It began way back in June 2021.
Tear down this wall.
And with his little orange hammer, Mr. Davey did.
Let me show you.
The blue wall came tumbling down, opening up the desperate and the desolate to a new life in the West Country. 6 months later, and the franchise was back, with Daisy Cooper taking the lead role while Ed Davey was in COVID isolation. Luckily, the Lib Dems still had a big prick to hand.
We are going to burst Boris's bubble.
Three,
so let's hear it.
Three, two, one.
In June 2022, Ed Davey was back, swapping the blue wall for a blue door.
It's time to show Boris the door.
Then the blockbuster hits kept on coming. In March 2023, he climbed behind the wheel of an orange tractor to knock down a blue wall of hay bales in an adrenaline-fueled instalment of Not Very Fast, But Very Furious.
Hi, buddy.
In May, it was the biggest clock-based drama since Back to the Future.
Time's up for Rishi Sunak and his appalling Conservative government. Yay! 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yay! In July, we were off to the circus with The Greatest Showman.
It's time to get these clowns out of number 10.
And just a few weeks ago, he was back behind the wheel and we were off to the movies.
Voters finally get to pack up this awful Conservative government. Throw their disastrous policies into the skip. Clean up the sleaze stains from the carpet. And eventually move the whole lot out of number 10.
And now, in the most hotly anticipated sequel since Police Academy 7, Mission to Moscow, Ed Davey is back as the stuntman. Although, unfortunately, the Lib Dems haven't actually done their stunt yet. So we're just watching pictures of quite a tall thing with a white sheet over it. It might be a guillotine. We don't know. The stuntman. Not in cinemas, but coming to a street near you. If you live on a street in a Tory Lib Dem marginal where the sitting MP is a current cabinet minister, promising to get them out now. This is Times Radio, the election station, bringing you live coverage of Lib Dem stunts. There are now three people trying to get a white sheet off the prop, bringing you this live, uninterrupted coverage of the Lib Dems election stunt. They've taken the sheet off. It's a blue. What is it? Is it a big egg timer? It's a big egg timer. If you're just tuning in to us, the big news, the Lib Dems have got a big blue egg timer. Is it a variation on the clock? Are they going to turn it over and tell us it's time up for the Tories? What's helpful is that there are now two Lib Dem press officers standing in front of it, blocking the view of the one camera which is turned up to this street in Hertfordshire. For some reason, producer Andrew's saying that's enough live coverage of the stunt. Ed Davey's not there yet. And they can't start without him. More on that as we get it. Here on Times Radio, the election station. Even the BBC have cut away from it now, and they've got all sorts of public service responsibilities.
The Columnists with Ali Burt, Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton.
Yes, they're both here, both wearing burgundy.
Yep. Morning.
Morning.
Do you actually have a conversation every
week?
No,
we don't. It's just
so in tune.
Well, you could have told us you were wearing orange, actually.
Burnt orange. That's what everyone's wearing.
Yeah.
Shacket.
Yeah.
That's what all the cool kids are wearing.
It's what Obama wears, I think.
See, yeah.
Farmer.
Yeah. Oh, you got your style tips from Obama, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's an obvious icon for me to follow. Talking of icons that we should all be following, why are Labour people obsessed with talking about Margaret Thatcher? Rachel Reeves made her big maize speech last night.
As we did at the end of the 1970s, we stand at an inflection point. And as in earlier decades, the solution lies in wide-ranging supply-side reform to drive investment, remove the barriers constraining our productive capacity, and fashion a new economic settlement, drawing on evolutions in economic thought.
Spine-tingling stuff. Yeah. And then so they briefed this out, and it's all over the front of the papers, Rachel Reeves casting herself as Margaret Thatcher.
Yes.
Keir Starmer did it, a few weeks ago as well. And then immediately what she has to do then in the Q&A is walk it all back.
Look, I joined the Labour Party because I disagreed with so much of what Margaret Thatcher did to Britain in the 1980s. And my politics was a reaction against what she did. And what I'm arguing in the speech, that 1979 was a point where the country had to make a big choice. And they made the choice. I wouldn't draw the parallels too much.
Well, so what's the point?
Well, it's completely contradictory.
Yeah.
Yes, it was an inflection point, whatever that is. We kind of sort of understand what it is. Country made a choice with the consequences for the certain industries, entire industries and communities across the north of England, Scotland and Wales, which Labour Party opposed at the time. But she was saying it was the right choice. And now she's saying it's the wrong choice. Made her join the Labour Party.
The point really is that she's trying to get more Tory voters, isn't she? She's got that. It's a very simplistic idea that people who would have voted Tory but may now swing to Labour would all have loved Margaret Thatcher, isn't it? So we're going to try and get you by your totemic person, the person that you love most, which actually I think everyone's quite nuanced about Margaret Thatcher anyway. Probably
it's also been done before. I mean, it's now 35 years since Margaret Thatcher was 45 years since Margaret Thatcher was elected in 1979.
It's more than 10 years since she died.
Yes, and the Labour Party Blair did this. Mm. They did this, you know, in the 90s. I mean, and that was fine then because Thatcher was still sort of slightly defining the debate, I guess, and saying, well, we can live with Thatcher was a sort of radical and a signal to say we're not loony. But why in 2024 you don't need to do it?
You don't need to, worry, you don't
need to do it. 5 points ahead of the polls as well.
Well, yeah.
It's a sort of, you know...
half of the electorate, they won't be really very aware who Margaret Thatcher was.
Yeah.
What worries me more, actually, is the fact that they're basically dissing Tony Blair. Yeah. And actually, I think quite a lot of those Tory voters would have thought, you know, we're a bit nervous about Labour, we're not sure about them, they may be raising taxes, but look at what Tony Blair did, it wasn't that bad. So people have kept saying to me, you know, actually a Labour government under Tony Blair wasn't that bad. So if you then say you disagree with Tony Blair and you start being rude about him rather than Margaret Thatcher, actually just makes them slightly uneasy because they're thinking, well, if you're not Tony Blair, what are you going to be?
Yeah, a bit weird, because Tony Blair won three elections in a row, even 2005, he had a majority of, 60 or something. So, a bit weird to diss him, given that you want to start winning elections.
Weird. It's a very weird thing. But then David Lammy's been doing it. He's been defending Rachel Reeves' comparison to Margaret Thatcher, saying you can take issue with Mrs. Thatcher's prescription, which is obviously what lots of Labour people would do, but she had a big manifesto for change and set about a course that's lasted for two decades. Margaret Thatcher was a visionary leader for the UK. No doubt about it. That's absolutely clear.
Lots of people who have big manifestos for change, we don't agree with them.
Well, Hitler had a big manifesto for change.
Exactly.
But there's no... Well, he said what he liked about it, but he had good
slogans. Yeah, or he stuck to his beliefs.
Yeah.
And it's just not...
He said he was going to do it, and he did it.
And so that's all nonsense. I don't get this. And there'd be Labour people in the Red Wall who voted Conservative in 2019 who really don't like Margaret Thatcher. The idea that just because they voted Conservative last time for Boris and Brexit means that they thought Thatcher was a great thing. Do you know what I mean? They didn't. That's why it was a surprise that they voted Tory, because of what had happened to them previous generation.
So it's 38 years since Thatcher last stood for an election. So you'd basically be pushing 60 if you'd to have voted for her.
Yes.
Well, it's almost like going back to Churchill now, isn't it? So you kind of expect them to start evoking the Second World War soon. Yeah. So there's that sense that you could go through all the former prime ministers and what you want, you know, why you wanted bits and pieces of them.
Well, they still talk about Disraeli in the Tory party.
Their biggest problem is they can't say anything at the moment. So Rachel Reeves can't say how she's going to either get the money that she wants to spend or what she's going to do with the economy, because she's so nervous about the fact that she's going to be held to account.
So they're not actually doing the thing that they're talking about. No. They haven't got a big manifesto for change.
Yeah. No.
They're sort of invoking someone who did and saying we need one of those. Yeah.
But she's also saying she joined the Labour Party for the wrong reasons. She was wrong to join the Labour Party in the 1980s, because what it turned out she was against then, with hindsight, it was a good thing, it was the right thing to do.
Well, it's okay, because never mind Margaret Thatcher, Keir Starmer's tackling the big political issue. Last week or the week before? Rishi Sunak and his wife
a couple of weeks,
sat down, Akshata Murthy sat down with Grazia magazine to discuss their domestic arrangements. In which it basically turns out that Rishi Sunak is a nightmare. He goes and makes the bed when he should be working. She loads the dishwasher, he unloads it and reloads it.
He's passive aggressive, isn't he? You have to say that would be quite irritating if you were.
I mean, it's being seen as a sort of quirky male female husband wifey type thing, but it's blinking weird.
Yeah, he's weird. So it's now Keir Starmer's waded in. He's now spoken to Grazia about dishwashers. He says, do we all stat the dishwasher? Yes, we do. Is that his new slogan?
Yes,
we can. Yeah. Do we all stat the dishwasher?
Yes, we do.
Stack it for the many, not the few.
Yeah. He said, do we all have to change the bedding? Yes, we do. But I'd never go up and check or criticise my wife when she does it. Then talking about the dishwasher, she says, my wife does it much better than I do. There's no doubt about that. But happily, we don't live in a household where we go around criticising each other for the chores. We're just very glad when the other one's actually done it.
Yeah.
I think this kind of stuff before an election is really ridiculous because you want to say, what are your big issues? Like with Rachel Reeves, you want to say, what are you actually doing? And the fact they're all arguing over the dishwasher, it was the same actually with Theresa May when she said, we have boy jobs and girl jobs that my husband takes. We don't want to know that sort of stuff because everyone does that kind of stuff. It's so dull. And the one thing I really liked about Keir Starmer in that sense was that he didn't involve his wife. We don't know the names of his children. He's not constantly doing, you know, shoots with them. And now, if he's going to bring his wife into everything, it's going to be really irritating.
Well, this is part of the problem with the book, the Tom Baldwin book. That was supposed to lift the lid on his private life. And they said, oh, well, if we do that, then it was going to be open, you know, open season. So just the very idea of a biography of Keir Starmer is nodding off in mid-sentence.
The dishwasher thing, it's weird as well. That's sort of gratuitously having to say that your wife stacks it better than you do, which is sort of slightly damning with faint praise, isn't it?
Views on my wife. Yeah. I genuinely have no view on how anyone in our house stacks the dishwasher. No,
but badly in our case, I think. I mean, we all just chuck it in.
So. It's also that male thing of saying, well, you do it so much better than I do. It matters more to you than it does to me.
Yeah.
That's why you do 80% of the domestic work in the house.
But also, it has no effect at all on how you're going to run a country. So
none whatsoever.
You literally can't.
Sorry.
There's no way you can say, you know, if you're a neat dishwasher tidy or you're not, it doesn't really affect what you're going to do with the economy or how you're going to solve the NHS.
Yeah, but it does say something about your personality if you take it to extremes like the Prime Minister does.
Wait, and actually it does affect how you run the country.
Because you're not there.
You are leaving your desk in number 10 to go upstairs and make the bed.
Yes. I mean, as I say again, that is frankly weird.
Yeah. Or maybe he has his best thoughts, though, making the bed. You never know.
But again, it's one of those things. It's a bit like the boys' jobs, girls' jobs thing, where someone thinks, we'll do like a light, soft thing. What's the worst that can happen? And actually, it turns out you show that you're a psycho. Accidentally.
Yes.
In the dishwasher.
Yeah.
Let's move away from the older people in politics. Let's talk about the young people in politics. So, Alice, you've interviewed Plaid's newest peer. She's going to be introduced in the Commons tomorrow, Carmen Smith.
Mm. So Carmen Smith, I thought, was actually rather extraordinary. And I used to work in the House of Lords. I was a political commentator there when I was exactly her age, 27, and I never thought you'd get a young peer in there. And actually, I think it's a very good idea. You've got 800 peers to have one under 30. And she was a carer for her dad who had dementia for 10 years. She looked after him. So she knows all about caring. She's got great ideas on that. She can also add to the debate in other ways, just to have someone who is slightly younger with a different point of view. And she's going to be the only Welsh representative from Plaid Cymru, and that's kind of extraordinary in some ways that you've got this vast country and you've only got one representative from Plaid Cymru. So in many ways I think she's probably the perfect person to have in, and she wasn't the first choice actually. There was a man, but Plaid Cymru changed male female, so she got it in a rather extraordinary move. But
and how old is she?
She's 27. She looks great. She's got this sort of bright orange hair. She wears these rather extraordinary dresses. The peers aren't going to know what's hit them, actually. I think they're going to be
They've got some pretty weird clobber themselves.
Lisa's her own hair.
Yeah.
Well, she's going to have vegan fur and things. It's all going to be very complicated because she is definitely Gen Z.
We've also had the other introduction of, he's quite old by comparison, 31-year-old Ross Kempsall. Briefly, reporter at Times Radio, but then he went off to be a spin doctor for Boris Johnson, and still is, hence how he's got a seat in the House of Lords, because that's how these things work. And he made his maiden speech in the House of Lords this week.
So aspirational was my grandfather that he would hold up a copy of the newspaper in front of him at the breakfast table, even though he could not properly read. In just two generations, his grandson would go on to graduate from the University of Cambridge and would be published in many such newspapers as a journalist. And I say, with apologies to the noble lord, Lord Young of Cookham, also sometimes as a source briefing government policy. Either way, it was a trajectory that was surely unimaginable to my forebears. So when I stood up a few moments ago to speak for the first time in your lordship's house, I felt propelled by decades of their hard work and aspiration.
All that time hanging out with Boris Johnson hasn't rubbed the after dinner speaking routine hasn't rubbed off on him, has it? Do you think it's a good thing having people in their 20s and 30s in the Lords?
I suppose so. I mean, I don't agree with the House of Lords as constituted. I don't think we should have an unelected second chamber. I think it all stinks. I think the whole honours system does. I think it needs to be completely reformed. I mean, so yeah, at the margins, it's nice to have a 27-year-old in there with some different perspective, that's fine, but I don't think it should be how we're appointing how we're deciding legislators in this country. No.
Well, Carmen Smith doesn't actually want the House of Lords either, which is bizarre in some ways that you go in if you don't want something. But on the other hand, I think you do need people like that. And I think what she points out is that she pays something like, I think it's sort of £3 a month to her party, whereas a lot of the people in there have paid a lot of money to their party. And, you know, that actually the cash for honours situation, I think, is really weird that you can now almost pay to get a peerage. So I think she's right. You should want to dissolve it, but don't, you know, do go in there if you get the chance, probably.
Can I just read out this SMS? Because the guy makes a fair point. A bit rich, Robert Crampton criticising Starmer for talking about family stuff. That's all he does in the Times. Tony and Henley. Fair point, Tony. Fair point.
Although that is your job.
That is my job.
Sadly, you're not pitching to run the country.
No, exactly.
A lot better.
Yeah. I was going to add that.
Now, you've both been writing this week about the right to roam. What prompted... Who went first?
I did.
Oh, Robert's first.
But Alice can answer that. Okay. She wrote the sensible version of the column.
No, well, it's the complication, actually, is the Earl Bathurst, I think he's called. And he, basically, he's got 30,000 acres, but 3,000 acres is allowed to be roamed on by people, well, his neighbours, effectively. And they can come in and they can use it and they can get around the town. It's very close to Cirencester. And he has now said, enough, I don't want to spend the whole time looking after this 3,000 acres on my own just for your pleasure, effectively. I think that you should pay, unless you live very close by in the shadow of his, effectively, castle, you need to pay. And if you are living very close by, you have to give a £10 deposit and then you can have a card to get in and out. And in many ways, it's understandable because actually he is having to look after the space. But on the other hand, there is something about this man who's got a 40-foot yew hedge, which takes 12 people, I think, 2 days to cut.
Wow.
Twice a year. So, you know, he's got quite a lot of money. He's got...
Why doesn't he just get 6 people to spend 4 days doing
it? Well, he could, couldn't he?
Yeah. Well, we could speak to this bit. There was a protest. 500 people gathered in Cirencester Park at the weekend to protest about the decision by Lord Bathurst. And it was organised by John Moses on the line. Hi, John.
Good morning.
So, what's your argument as to why you should be able to romp across Lord Bathurst's back garden?
Well, my back garden is a small little patch of land, whereas Lord Bathurst is a 15,000-acre estate, 3,000 of which, you know, is Cirencester Park. So I wouldn't necessarily compare it to someone's private back garden. You know, this estate has been open for 300 years, and the reason for that is that it earned all the money to buy the land in the slave trade. And then this was a kind of philanthropic gesture from his ancestor, effectively, to open it to the town's residents in perpetuity. So it seems a bit rich after 300 years that suddenly the money isn't there to pay, when we know that the family, the Bathurst, is still extremely wealthy. You know, they've got all kinds of commercial operations on the estate that makes them a good buck from the land. We also pay large amounts of public subsidy to the estate every single year, to the tune of hundreds of thousands of pounds. So continuing access doesn't seem like too high a price to pay for that.
Where do you stand on it, Robert?
Well, I agree with everything that John, the chap's just said. I mean, I was making a joke in my column about how I wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't like it to apply to me, but as you said, there is no comparison, really, between people, you know, because people say, so how would you like people to come and tramp across your back garden? But it's not really his back garden.
It's not that they're looking in his front room.
And no, and he is extremely wealthy. It always irritates me when aristocrats say they, you know, their assets rich and cash poor, because any of the rest of us in that position sell some of our assets, you know? But it's always taken off the table that you might sell some of your broad acres, or one of your houses, or one of your tenant cottages, or whatever.
Yew trees.
Yes, that's always assumed that that's there forever.
Yeah.
So I don't think Lord Earl Bathurst, the ninth Earl Bathurst, needs the money. And I think well done for organising the protest. Good luck to you.
What about farmers? Because farmers obviously have this issue that there are footpaths and things that go across it. And it's quite annoying for them. They've got livestock and people aren't always that well behaved with rubbish and
dogs. Well, that's the problem. I'm very pro right to roam, and I think that we do want more access. Only 8% of England and Wales you can actually walk over and right to roam, and in Scotland you have got the chance to do it. And it's worked very well in Scotland. The problem is that you do have to have some responsibilities, and that's what's gone wrong with the farmers, that they've already doled out £2 million this year for dogs savaging sheep. Mm. You've got to keep your dogs on leads. You need to shut gates. And it's also just the mess and the crap effect, which it really is that actually don't go and leave loo roll everywhere. You know, don't leave your litter there. And so there has got to be some sort of arrangement whereby you respect their land, because they're actually producing food as well. So you do have to look at what they're doing and say, in return, we're not going to walk straight across the middle of your field. Can we go down the edge of your field?
But we don't go around banning things for everybody because of the behaviour of a few people, do we? But I mean, we don't ban driving a car because some people speed.
But on the other hand, if you go to London, there are certain rules about if you drive a car. So if you drive a car, you stop at the traffic light.
Yeah.
You know, if you drive a car, you know, you park in the right place.
And that's, agree. John, do you accept that some people have been behaving badly in Cirencester Park?
I'm not sure about Cirencester Park. It all looked pretty spick and span to me. But yeah, there is an issue in the wider countryside sometimes with irresponsibility. But you have to remember that the people that mostly show that disregard don't have a clue what the access laws are. So the people that are really put off by what your access laws are and the law of trespass and all the rest of it are those who are most diligent already about what the wording of the law is, and most scared of the people that it empowers. So, you know, I think when we're talking about the right to roam, what we're really talking about is a right of responsible access. You know, there's already laws in place that prohibit things like livestock worrying. You know, the question is enforcement, it's education. And it's true that we haven't got the balance right, I think, in this country, particularly around dogs. But then we also haven't tried any attempts to really regulate dogs or educate dog owners. So, you know, one of the things that we do as a campaign is come up with a series of proposals that we would like to see go alongside any new access reform that help mitigate those kinds of issues as well.
Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton, of course, you can read them in The Times every week with your subscription at thetimes.co.uk. Up next, it's PMQ's Unpacked.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Tim Shipman.
Yes, Tim Shipman's here for PMQs Unpacked. How are you, Tim?
Hello, Matthew. I'm very well.
And as a special end of term treat, because off now for 3 weeks, Jeff Norcott's here.
I'm a big fan of the show, genuinely. I don't watch it live anymore. Because I think you guys realised that it's a form of entertainment, isn't it?
It's just for the lols.
Well, it's somewhere between soap opera, sport. There's sometimes a bit of politics there. I was supposed to be doing this the other week, and then I had a stomach bug. I don't know if you remember, and it was that really boring week. I've never been more delighted.
Yeah, you messaged me afterwards and said, I'm really pleased.
It was very serious.
We could probably have done with your help that week, though,
yeah,
I suspect.
It would have massively helped. So, what are your expectations?
Well, I'm hoping to see a lot of Rishi Sunak saying that he won't be lectured by, but I hope that he changes it up a bit. bit and uses other phrases and says, "Oh, that's a bit rich coming from you," or "Hark at him coming off all high and mighty."
Hark at her.
Because he keeps using that phrase. He just needs to mix it up. So I'm looking forward to that. I wonder if Starmer might have one of his high noble weeks where he picks some cause, like victims of the Great Fire of London. You know, it might be one of those weeks for him, because I don't know if
he's serious.
Well, yeah, if he climbs into them a bit, there's a chance they might unite behind Sunak. So I'll be interested to see where he goes.
Does it feel like they're in the mood to unite behind Rishi Sunak, Tim?
Well, I would have thought one of the more interesting bits about this is whether he can cheer them up now, because the more important meeting for Rishi Sunak is not the one with Keir Starmer. It's the one at 5 o'clock where he has to go and meet all his backbench MPs. And if he's done well at PMQs, that meeting's probably likely to go a little bit more smoothly for him. So I imagine there'll be some fruity rhetoric to get all that noise behind him.
How serious is the threat to him? Because we keep being told something changed last week. But the truth is, there's a lot of people who should have realised they were probably going to lose previously, woke up to that fact. But recognising that they're heading for a loss based on the polls doesn't necessarily mean, so therefore we need to change the leader.
What was that line about, you know, it's deadly important but not serious, or the other way around, or something like that? I mean, yes, there's lots of it. There's unsolicited calls coming in to journalists saying, "Up with this, we will not put. You just wait, we're about to do something." I mean, my personal expectation would be that I think it's unlikely that they move against him before the local elections, not least because somebody else will then have to carry the can in the local elections, and it would be a bit nuts to want to do that. You'd want to pin that on an outgoing prime minister if he is outgoing. But you know, call me a cynic, but I've been doing this for 23 years now, and I've had a lot of calls with Tory MPs over the years who are about to defenestrate their leader, and we all have to acknowledge that they do get round to it eventually, but it tends not to come in the first, second or third wave of the threats, and I'd say we're in about wave two at the moment.
So sometimes go, lots of people already watching along on the YouTube channel in Guildford and Minnesota, West Sussex, Weardale, Sherwood Forest, Leicester. So get online if you want to know, and let us know what you think about what is happening in the House of Commons. It's Tim Shipman, Jeff Norcott. We're going live to the House of Commons now. It's question number one from Keir Starmer.
Can I thank the Prime Minister for his words in welcoming Vaughan Gething to his post as First Minister of Wales? As the first black leader of any European government, it's a historic moment that speaks to the progress and values of modern-day Wales. Yeah. And I also pay tribute to Mark Drakeford for his long, steady service in Wales. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, violent prisoners released early because the Tories wrecked the criminal justice system. 3,500 small boat arrivals already this year because the Tories lost control of the borders. The NHS struggling to see people because the Tories broke it. Millions paying more on their mortgages. A budget that hit pensioners. A £46 billion hole in his sums. Why is the Prime Minister so scared to call an election?
Mr. Speaker, as I said in January, my working assumption is that the election will be in the second half of the year. But I must say, I thought that out of everybody, he'd actually be the most grateful, Mr. Speaker, because he's now actually got time to come up with a plan for Britain. We're all looking forward to finally seeing it.
Was that it? that is response. I mean, he seems in a better mood, Rishi. He's got the inflation news. I'd imagine he must have just wept a bit because it's been several successive weeks where nothing's gone right. But I suppose it was a slightly scattergun question from Starmer. And then sort of saying that you should be grateful is one of those, well, it's clippable, isn't it?
But I suppose the very slight implication of his response, Tim, is that you've got time to come up with a plan for Britain because you're going to be the next Prime Minister.
Yes.
Well, yes, but their attack will be, you know, these guys. We've got a plan and they haven't. No one will really need to know what their plan is. It's the idea that you have one that's most important. I mean, Labour have been building up for this election attack for some time. I mean, Starmer and his Starmer's team have been convinced that the Prime Minister is going to call an election in May. Those of us speaking to people in Number 10 have been trying to tell them this is nonsense since the end of December. But last week they were teeing it up. They sent out a message to all of their campaigners saying the government's going to announce an election on Monday, and they just wanted to make it look like Sunak had bottled it. Now, Sunak did have a wobble last week about whether or not to do it, but the plan has always been towards the end of the year, and they're just trying to sort of... Labour is probably more prepared for an election than Tories at the moment. Tories don't have a manifesto. They only began meetings about it last week. So, you know, this is sort of, I would expect more of this. It was interesting at the start, though, wasn't it? He did, you know, we always say he doesn't pull everything together. He's almost pulling it all together in
that,
question
that felt
one.
Like the,
that felt the last bit.
Yeah, that was
number six.
That was what I was odd about. You say the Tories don't have a manifesto. I sort of got this theory that Labour could actually fight the election without a manifesto as just kind of like a high status move and say, we don't even need this. It's been that bad. We don't even need this.
We've tried having a plan. Look what happened.
Yeah, we'll beat you without a plan. Just one little note. Annalise Dodds sitting over Starmer's left shoulder. No Angela Rayner, who does generally look unimpressed with everything that Starmer says. Although Annalise Dodds is not exactly a smile fest herself, but that was notable too.
Well done for spotting Annalise Dodds. Extra points. extra points for that. Maybe she's off. Maybe Angela Rayner's off reading the Michael Ashcroft book about her.
One of her mortgages.
Yes, very good. Right, let's go back to the House of Commons. This is question two for Keir Starmer.
Oh, we're ready. Just call it. Just call it. Oh. But Mr. Speaker, he talks a plan. Let's just take his Rwanda policy. When they first announced this gimmick, they claimed it would settle tens of thousands of people. The Home Office then whittled it down to a mere 300. Four times that number have already arrived this month, and the backlog stands at 130,000. Can the Prime Minister see any flaw in his plan to deport less than 1% of that backlog?
Mr. Speaker, since I became Prime Minister, the number of small boat crossings are actually down by over a third, Mr. Speaker. And that's because we've doubled National Crime Agency funding, we've increased the illegal enforcement raids by 70%, we've closed 7,500 bank accounts, deported 24,000 illegal migrants, and processed over 112,000 cases, more than at any point in the last two decades, Mr. Speaker. And it's crystal clear, as we're seeing from the Labour Party's opposition in this House, while we're committed to stopping the boats, the Labour Party would keep them coming.
It was interesting. If Starmer has got a comic instinct in him, he said, we've closed 7,500 bank accounts. He'd go, well, those are probably businesses that have had to shut down.
Yeah.
But I suspect he won't do that. But there was a slightly strange moment when he stood up, when he said, we're ready. There was a little hint of Ed Miliband.
Just a hint of Zippy again.
Doing an impression of Matt Ford doing an impression of Josh Widdicombe, I think. but it was just a touch of Ed Miliband and toffee nuts.
Yeah,
remember?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm tough enough. Oh, we're ready. Don't worry about that.
Oh, we are ready. just call it. Rishi Sunak there once again demonstrating that his record on illegal migration would be much better if he abandoned the Rwanda idea.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think the significance of the Rwanda thing, if they get anywhere with it, if they can start showing planes taking off, even if they've only got five people on board, you can sort of say, well, this was a goal and we went and obtained it and the other lot didn't want to bother and it acts as an incident, you know, it acts as a deterrent and all the rest of it. The purpose of it really is as a political sort of symbol now rather than the specifics of it. And this kind of works for both sides because it allows Starmer to say the whole system's a shambles, it doesn't work and your numbers don't work. And it allows Sunak to say, yeah, but you're not really interested in this and you wouldn't do any of it and the numbers would get even worse. And I think both of those propositions have a grain of truth in them.
And it's one of those issues where there is a difference, which on most issues they're just sort of arguing over
who would do it better.
Who would do it better?
Is actually different.
Yeah,
and Starmer's a bit coy about that.
I think Rwanda is now in the territory. Do you remember that point in Brexit where you would say the word and people go? Oh. I think Rwanda is a slightly less sexy version of that. I think it's become a slight embarrassment. And yeah, I don't know what they think. Is they think they get people on planes and then suddenly all the conservative switchers will go, all right, I'm sorry for doubting you, we're going to vote for you. That's not what's going to happen. But like you say, it's sort of a convenient political battleground for the time being.
And there is also a problem, is that the extent to which voters are just switched off from even listening to the Tories.
Mm.
And so even if they do start, if they get round to saying, oh, look, it's working, you know, but it's possible that nobody's taken any notice.
Well, people just do a cost analysis. When that first flight goes, they'll be able to go, right, this is how much it costs per person. You could have stayed at Sandals in Barbados for a year for this. So yeah. I don't know if
not
they
for
can...
£8,000 you couldn't. You're lucky to get one night left for that.
Yeah, very good. Right, let's go back to the House Comments. Matt, it's PMQs and Pat with me, Matt, Johnny, Tim Shipman and comedian Jeff Norcott. This is question three from Keir Starmer.
The tragedy is we know the Prime Minister doesn't even believe in the Rwanda gimmick. He tried to stop funding it, but he's now so diminished that his entire focus is stopping his MPs holding the sword of Damocles above his head. Perhaps even literally in the case of the Leader of the House.
That's Paddy Morgan's famous sword carrier.
He's to deflate his party with a couple of empty planes, praying they won't notice when the flights stop going, the boat's still coming, and the costs keep mounting. How has he managed to spend £600 million of taxpayer money on a gimmick to deport 300 people?
Mr. Speaker, it's crystal clear. Not only does the Labour Party not have a plan to fix this issue, but the truth is they don't actually care about fixing this issue. When he talks about the gangs, when we gave the police new powers to crack down on the people smuggling gangs, he spent months campaigning and voting against it. Thanks to our new laws, 900 criminals have been arrested. 450 have been convicted, serving over 370 years behind bars. If it was up to him, those criminals would still be out on our streets, Mr. Speaker. And the truth is, if he wasn't the Labour leader, he'd still want to be their lawyer.
Wow. Punchy stuff. I was thinking he's going to mention the lawyer thing, and then it seemed for a brief millisecond that he wouldn't, and he went in there. I mean, just on a style note, Starmer reads almost exclusively from his notes, and if PMQs has one value, it's to give the British public an insight. How nimble are you? How agile for you? And he sometimes comes off a little bit like somebody doing their GCSE oral. It's a bit. He literally his fingers follow the words on the page, and you know, Sunak has got a lot of faults and stuff, but he does give at least some sense of spontaneity in his responses.
It was interesting. So his joke about the sword carrier...
It's completely wrong, the joke.
What, carrying the sword? Starmer
said that Sunak wants to stop his backbenchers holding the sword of Damocles over his head. No, he doesn't. He wants them to hold on to it. Because once they let go, it's going to cut his head off. So Starmer got that completely the wrong way around. But yeah. Annalise Dodds loved the joke. You know, po-faced Annalise Dodds was chuckling away as if Starmer had really hit
Penny,
the mother
Penny
load.
Penny Mordaunt didn't look like she enjoyed the joke.
No. I mean, Penny Mordaunt is a very interesting character. She is quite personable. She's, to the average pundit in the street, highly charismatic and looks like a normal person compared with a lot of these Tories. A lot of her MP colleagues will say they just don't get much back when they talk to her. There's not a lot of humour and interaction and small talk and all the stuff that sort of greases the wheels of Westminster. And she's one of those people who seems to, whose public image seems very different from her private image.
Somebody actually, this wasn't meant as an insult, somebody said that it's a bit like Boris Johnson, who has this reputation of being colourful, gregarious and public.
Yep.
But actually he's a
brooding
soul in
private. Yeah.
Well, she froze a bit in the leadership election. I mean, they all froze a bit in that leadership election.
Including the winners.
But yeah, she didn't offer much of... I mean, we often see those clips of her kind of taking the sword to the SNP at the dispatch box, and she gives the impression of somebody with real character. But yet, at the point where she had a chance to make her case, she didn't really do it. But I mean, look, I know maybe this isn't the right thing you're supposed to say in 2024, but the hair... The hair is incredible.
She's got a fabulous head of
hair.
It's
the most consistent hair in the public life. And Rishi's
got... No, I'm going to disagree with that. Ben Bradshaw. Ben Bradshaw's got the best hair in the Commons.
He is good. He delivers. Rishi, I mean, in fairness, Starmer... I heard the other week that there was some argument, really, as whether or not he had good or bad hair.
Yeah.
It's a bit overmoosed.
Yeah, it's overmoosed. he should let it all... Matthew Powers has been writing the Times today about we shouldn't be using shampoo at all. Maybe that's where Keir Starmer should go.
Is he one of those people who once went 6 weeks without washing his hair and it cleaned
30,
itself?
30 years he hasn't used shampoo.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, that's fine once you get through the first... I remember when he did this to start with. It smells of sheep dip, I remember him writing, for the first 6 weeks. Do not try this at home.
I'm not sure this
is
the moment.
If you have actual people living with
you. I don't think this is the moment for Keir Starmer to stop washing his hair.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the right moment,
Stick with the mousse. Right, well, we've covered a lot of ground there. Let's go back. This is question number four from Keir Starmer.
Speaker, I've prosecuted more people smugglers than he's had helicopter rides and that's a lot. And this, I've done it. Rwanda gimmick is going to cost the taxpayer £2 million for every one of his 300 people that they deport. And I know the Prime Minister likes to spend a lot on jet setting, but that's some plane ticket. It's the cost of Tory chaos, and it's working people who are paying the price. The man he made his immigration minister let the cat out of the bag when he said the Prime Minister's symbolic flights will not provide a credible deterrent. And we know the Prime Minister himself thought it wouldn't work. If the people selling this gimmick don't believe in it, why should the country?
Mr. Speaker, he's very keen to talk about who he prosecuted. He's a bit less keen to talk about when he defended Hizbut Tahrir, Mr. Speaker. When it comes to this question of how to deal with people who are here illegally, his values are simply not those of the British people. After all, this is the person who campaigned to stop the deportation of foreign dangerous criminals, Mr. Speaker. A dangerous criminal was jailed for dealing Class A drugs after he fought to keep him here. A gangmaster was convicted of carrying a knife after he fought to keep him here. So whether it's representing terrorists or campaigning for criminals, it's clear whose side he's on, and it's not the British people.
Well, lots of people on the YouTube channel spotting Hollycopter.
Yes.
It was quite... There was a joke in there somewhere about I've prosecuted more people smugglers than he's had Hollycopter rides, and that's a lot.
Isn't Hollycopter, you know, when children can't say certain words, like hollybobs, and they can't say Elizabeth, they say Libibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibib
know, birds.
One-legged
birds, Mflingos. Thought I'd share that.
I'd like to... I mean, both of them were fluffing lines there in a way. There is a real end-of-term feel to this because actually they're both in their political safe space, prosecuting ideas that they've rehearsed over several weeks. You've got no plan to bring down the boats. You used to represent Hizbut Tahrir. This is it's almost old. Choreographed, actually.
One interesting thing I noticed is saying Rwanda gimmick a lot. Yes. That's obviously the word in the Trouble Land.
Yeah.
Keir Starmer seems to be acknowledging, he's talking about now the price for every one of those people you deport, that it's going to cost only 300 people will be deported. He appears to be acknowledging now that the flights are going to take
off. Some people might actually take
off. What he's not doing is saying, you know, it's 600 million and no one is ever going to leave.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I mean, we don't know that that's the case, but if they could, you know, this bill is about to ping pong between the Commons and the Lords this week and possibly into next.
And what they don't want is in a fortnight's time, if the flights took, well, they won't be here, in a month's time when they're back at PMQs, if flights have taken off, they don't want Rishi Sunak saying, three weeks ago, victory. You said it wouldn't happen.
How patient do you think Rishi Sunak will be with mentioning inflation? Do you think that will be the question six thing? Because he must be desperate to mention it, even though a lot of people argue you either give blame for when it goes up and blame, you know, credit for when it comes down. It's either both or neither. But I guess Starmer will want to avoid giving him a half volley to mention that.
I mean, I think actually it's a measure of sort of how reasonably well Sunak's doing that he hasn't yet felt the need to play that card. You know, and the argument about Starmer, you know, that these are not the values of the British people, I suspect if your average poll would show that that is the case. The problem Sunak's got is the British people, are they listening to him anymore? People do have their doubts about Starmer, but they've pretty much given up on the Tory party.
And, that's Sunak's challenge to get back into the
conversation somehow. And Prime Minister's questions is not going to accomplish that, but what it probably does, this means he gets a slightly easier time at 5 o'clock from his own MPs.
Which is the most important thing in terms of, once you're in the Theresa May realm of just getting to the end of the day.
Well, and get into the sort of period of where they can't get at you.
Lots of helicopters on the YouTube channel. Someone else has also just WhatsApped in, so they've just discovered the YouTube app on my Sky Q box, says Lee. So they can see, you can now see a giant terracotta mat and the rest of us. So you can actually watch it on your telly. So there we are.
It's better than the camouflage you had on last week.
I can't, honest to God, I can't win. You've got a shacket on. Everyone's wearing a shacket.
Yeah, but only one of us looks like we're going to a 90s creative advertising meeting.
Well, if you want to see what my jacket looks like, you need to go online to the YouTube channel. Let's go back to the House of Commons now. Question number 5 from Keir Starmer.
it's genuinely sad to see him reduced to this nonsense. Let's take another example that I started with. After 14 years of Tory chaos in the prison system, the Justice Secretary is reduced to begging the Prime Minister either to send fewer offenders to prison or to release them even earlier.
Alex,
I must say, I've got sympathy for anyone trying to get an answer out of the Prime Minister. So what's it going to be? Fewer criminals behind bars in the first place or more released early onto our streets? Which is it?
Mr. Speaker, thanks to our record and plan, violent crime has fallen by 50%, Mr. Speaker. We've recruited more police officers, given them more powers, and kept serious offenders in prison for longer. What's his record? He voted against greater protection for our emergency workers, opposed tougher sentences for violent criminals, and failed to give police the powers they need. It would be back to square one with Labour, soft on crime and soft on criminals.
Well, there we are, soft on crime and soft on criminals. So Keir Starmer has now described Rishi Sunak as being reduced and diminished.
Yes, it's just a bit heightist, isn't
it? It's a little bit smuggling in.
Diminutive height, will come next. And also, he's been reading his Sunday Times, because we introed the big read at the weekend on Alex Chalk losing his rag with Downing Street over why they can't make up their minds about how they're going to ease prison numbers. And I'm sure the Justice Secretary is listening very closely to the Prime Minister's answer there, and he still won't know what they're going to be doing.
In terms of noise behind them, one thing that's changed in the last few weeks is that Starmer tends to get a fairly unified noise from his MPs now, and Sunak gets less noise, less support, which is bad enough. But if you could still consider, they've got a hell of a lot more MPs still.
Yeah.
I mean, they've still got, what, like three, what's the number?
348.
I mean, it probably goes down, there's like a ticker that goes down, like the doomsday clock. Yeah, week on
it's
week.
Like the opposite of a Blue Peter totaliser.
Yeah. But it's still a hell of a lot more than the opposition benches. And if you just look at the front bench, there just seems to be, they look, bored's not quite the word, but they look like they want to get out of there as soon as possible.
Now, somebody has asked a question, who is sitting next to Rishi Sunak? And I've been trying to place her.
Me too.
And I can't.
Penny Mordaunt's on the other side.
Yeah, and there's
it looks a bit like someone dropped in for a WI meeting.
Kemi Brazen is there. But, you know. I think it was Women Inequalities, but it's not a Women Inequalities minute. I think it might be a whip. Maybe she was standing in.
How much notice do you think they get? Because immediately you're going to be on camera a lot. You know, whether you need to
If you're going to be on camera, you want your best jacket on.
You want your terracotta jacket on.
My sister has messaged in. She says she likes the terracotta jacket. It's nice and bright.
There we are. Little bit of spring colour.
No, a dash of. It's a beautiful thing, but I need something slimming, mate.
people now.
I don't think you're alone
on the YouTube channel talking about how Lindsay Hoyle's lost his confidence. He's barely spoken. We had a tiny bit of him there because he ballsed up last week, didn't he? When he didn't call Diane Abbott.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
That was bad.
And just like, you know, you're supposed to be there to create, you know, moments and respond to the moving events. For all the criticisms of John Bercow, it is vanishingly unimaginable to think that he would not have called Diane Abbott last week.
Yeah.
You know that time at your school when a teacher got in trouble and everyone knew that the teacher was in trouble? It was never quite the same for them after that. And he is. I mean, there's been a couple of key moments where he's just been not very good at being the Speaker of the House of Commons. And that's a hard, you know, it's hard enough to sort of, it's hard for the two leaders to stand up. But his competence is definitely under review.
Well, let's go back. Let's see who comes out of this last exchange most confident. Will Rishi Sunak be able to smuggle a mention of inflation in, regardless of the question? That's the big test.
Yes.
let's go back to the House of Commons. This is question number six from Keir Starmer.
You can see why he doesn't want an election. Yeah. Why his party have lost faith in. Why half his cabinet are lining up to replace him. No answers, no plan, no clue. And the Prime Minister has never had the courage to stand up to his party. So let me help him out and say to them what he wishes he could. The mortgage mayhem, the waiting list, the criminals walking free, they are the costs of Tory chaos. And if they can't bring themselves to stop the endless games and gimmicks, stop putting themselves before country. They should pack up, go home, and waste somebody else's time. It wasn't that difficult, was it, Prime Minister?
Mr. Speaker,
Prime Minister.
Oh, Lindsay Hall's up
Mr.
again.
Mr. Speaker, he talks about his ideas, but we're 2 weeks on from the budget. The Shadow Chancellor found time to make a one-hour speech last night, and we still don't know how they're going to pay for their £28 billion black hole. But while he tries to talk down Britain and the progress that we are making, today's news shows that the plan is working. Inflation down, Mr. Speaker. Energy bills down. Wages up, pensions up, and taxes cut by £900. And that is the choice. Higher taxes and back to square one with Labour, or tax cuts and real change with the Conservatives.
Well, we got there in the end.
Stick that on your poster.
I completely lost the thread of what Keir Starmer was doing there.
And you know what was unfortunate for him? Is straight afterwards he said, well, see, it wasn't that hard, was it? Well, you made it look hard, mate. You were struggling to get the word out.
He was trying to suggest that that's what Sunak should say to his own MPs.
But it wasn't...
But then it wasn't what Sunak would say to his own MPs. Because Sunak wouldn't talk about mortgage mayhem, would he?
Yeah, and it just went on for too long, and I forgot that he was role-playing.
It was sort of meta within meta. It kind of lost itself.
I got quite excited when he said that. I'll tell you what he'd like to say to his MPs. I thought we might get a swear word.
You thought it was going to be shorter, sweeter,
and it was a
and
bit
finished
of a,
with off,
and it was a bit of a salad. But Rishi, yeah, I mean, the problem for everybody is that some of the things that he's talking about, there is a better economic story to tell a little bit, but the feed through for that for people is going to, there's going to be such a lag. They're saying, oh, interest rates might come down, all right, so when you end your current inflated deal, hey, in 2026 you might start feeling the love. You know, food prices are still going up, so all of these are green shoots that nobody can yet see in bloom.
And then if they do, will anyone give them the credit? Because you can't simultaneously say all the bad stuff has nothing to do with us, but now that, you know, now things are looking better, it's all down to us.
Was that question six? Was that the last
one? That was the last one, sorry.
That was the last one, yeah, because I suppose the thing for Rishi is if he'd have said inflation at question five, then Starmer could have said, well, will you then take the blame for it going up to 11%? Yeah, yeah. So that might have been why he was quite disciplined in leaving it to the last one.
Hold it off, hold it back till afterwards. Well, will the backbench contributions be any better? What do you think, Tim?
Oh, I don't know. I thought that was pretty deep. I thought that was pretty lively. And Starmer did well enough, and Sunak did enough to keep them off his back, I think.
And in terms of this value beyond it being treating it like entertainment, it does give us an insight into the strategies that they're pursuing. The Tories are going to keep saying that Labour don't have a plan. Labour now appear to be acknowledging that some flights might take off to Rwanda, but they're just dismissing it as an expensive gimmick. But then Labour accusing the Tories of having no answers, no plan, no clue. So maybe the answer is that nobody has a manifesto or a plan going into the next election.
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought performance-wise, both of them were reasonable, but it did feel very much like safe space, well-rehearsed. You know, like when you're doing a knock-up in tennis, like no-one was really simply smashing any aces. It's like, come on, old boy. It's the last week of term. Nobody wants to be working up a sweat today.
That's working class hero Jeff Norcott out of the tennis courts.
I grew up in Wimbledon, mate. I grew
of
up in Wimbledon. I used
did.
To bunk in, watch yeah, McEnroe all right, and Fleming. All right. Yeah, I genuinely yeah, yeah. did, yeah, did yeah. Well, after 4 p.m, they used to open the gates for people to come out and we would go in and
you
just
get in.
And the posh people were delighted about that. Kids from a council estate walking around licking strawberries.
Lara Spirits here for the best of the West. How are you, Lara?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Overall, how were they?
They were good.
Yeah?
They were good. I mean, we're getting into the stage nearish to a possible election where there's quite a lot of these party questions from Tory MPs who are forecast to lose their seats, and Rishi Sunak giving them a kind of bit of a rallying cry. But Stephen Flynn, where we're going first, obviously that does not apply to him. This is part of those questions that we've heard a lot from Flynn this year, and I would actually say it's the best example of it so far, which is to say it's a question more aimed at the Labour front bench than it is aimed at Rishi Sunak. So take a listen to this.
Mr. Speaker, with his backbenchers looking for a unity candidate to replace him, which of the now numerous born-again Thatcherites on the Labour front bench does he believe best fits the bill?
Mr. Speaker, it And it was surprising to hear all this talk about the 1970s from the Shadow Chancellor in particular. But then if you see what's happening in places like Birmingham, where taxes are going up by 21%, Mr. Speaker, services are being cut, whether it's social care, children's services, or indeed in some streets, literally the lights are being turned off. It was unsurprising why they're talking about the 70s, and I can just say what they've done to Birmingham, the Conservatives will never let them do to Britain.
Rishi Sunak was thrown there by the fact it was quite a good joke.
Well, Stephen Flynn's good. He's a good operator. And I think what he demonstrates is that there is a value to questions that are pointed and have an economy of language. He's really come in and up their game since Ian Blackford. I think the thing with the hands in the pocket, someone's got to throw him off of that because that's obviously his safe space. So I think they've got to start saying, right, pockets. Of course, give him a nickname, Pocket Plonker, something like that, just to throw him out.
Pocket Plonker.
Yeah, just whisper it. It's very childish.
He came in once and I asked him why he does it, puts his hand in his pockets, and he says because it winds up the Tories. They think, you know, they do shout, but maybe they're not shouting Pocket Plonker.
Well, no, is he not yet 40?
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. And I think that sometimes some of the other, like the Tory and the Labour MPs, must look at that and think, if we had a communicator like that, what would be possible?
The was it Al Murray, when he was in, said that the putting the hands in the pocket was a stand-up trick. It made you look relaxed.
Yeah.
Even if you weren't.
Yeah, I normally scratch the top of my head. I sort of come out in hives. It's slightly hide behind the curtain, that kind of thing.
How do you communicate to the audience you're completely in control?
I suppose there's the barroom lean on the mic stand. I'm just a raconteur and a Weatherspoons. That's what that's my shtick.
Yeah, just leaning very casually.
Yeah, but you can quickly look too casual. So there is a sweet spot in the middle where you look like you're taking it seriously enough. And I just think, obviously, I'm not an SNP supporter, but I think he's done a cracking job for them.
There we are. We enjoyed that one, Lara. What else have you got for us?
We are going to Angela Richardson, who is a Conservative MP in Guildford. I think another of these Tory questions they are Tory questions. I was about to say, do they come from others, but the focus on planning and particularly this question as to whether or not there should be homes or other developments in their constituencies. And Angela Richardson forecast in current polling to lose her seat to the Lib Dems. So I think quite interesting to hear who Rishi Sunak includes in his answer.
Just before we go to that, I can bring you some breaking news. We've worked out who it is who's sitting next to Rishi Sunak. It is the Conservative MP, Felicity Buchan.
I'm still Googling here.
She's the MP for Kensington.
I've tried every whip.
She is the Housing Minister.
Of course she is.
Parliamentary Undersecretary of State for Housing and Homelessness.
That name sounds like a Tory algorithm name generator for a female Tory MP, was it? Felicity Buchan.
Felicity Buchan.
So many.
40. I thought it was a whip. I was
ready to jump in.
Did you know who it was?
No.
Oh.
I'm literally Googling pictures of women whips.
40 minutes it took. And honestly, the things that listeners have been in touch with today, correcting me about the population of the Orkneys, whether or not it's the Orkney or Orkneys, whether or not you should put your dishwasher on at midnight. Nobody could recognise. Anyway, Felicity Buchan, there she is. Sorry to interrupt you, Lara,
You didn't interrupt me, it's absolutely fine.
We can now go to the House of Commons, Angela Richardson's question, and some Felicity Buchan action.
Mr Speaker, the people of the eastern villages of Guildford, the Clandons, the Horsleys, Effingham, Ripley, Send and Ockham have had enough. Unwanted development and villages taken out of the Greenbelt without promised infrastructure is why I've been calling for an immediate review of the local plan for the last 3 years. Does my right honourable friend agree with me that Labour's promise of concreting over the Greenbelt, even against the wishes of local MPs, would simply add insult to injury?
Well, Mr Speaker, unlike both the Liberal Democrats and the Labour Party, who believe in top-down targets that decimate the Greenbelt, we believe in local people having a say over their local communities, which is why we are committed to protecting and enhancing the Greenbelt. The National Planning Policy includes strong protections to safeguard this important land. I know her local plan is currently under review by the Council, who have indicated they'll be updating it, and I hope the Honourable Member and her constituents engage with that process to help shape future at Guildford for future generations.
Well, you nearly fluffed the carefully rewritten local. Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh quite so heartily at her.
There were some fruity names as well. The Horsleys.
Effingham.
Effingham and the Horsleys.
Well, I don't know, is that families? Are they local families? The Horsleys have had enough.
I think there must be a Great Horsley and a Little Horsley, or an East Horsley and a West
Horsley.
We have Horsleys
for supper. Yeah. They've had enough.
Horsley on the Naze. They've had enough. It did just feel like a letter to the letter to a newspaper in real life.
With
form.
A circulation of about 200.
You're yeah. right, there is an East Horsley. I can only assume there might be a West Horsley. It's home to Horsley and Effingham Junction railway stations.
But don't you sort of feel like the people of those towns have generally just had enough of everything? So you just meet them in the morning. How are you? I've had enough.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, had enough. I have a very privileged life, but you know what? It's getting me down.
I don't think you move to Effingham unless you've had enough, do you?
Oh, here's an interesting trivia. Horsley Towers is a Gothic mansion designed by Sir Charles Barry, who later designed the Houses of Parliament. That's the sort of thing that interests you, Lara.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah.
as our A to Z.
Live broadcast from the top of the tower.
Yeah, go to Horsley.
With the people of Effingham down below waving their fists. We must be heard.
Is that enough of that, Lara?
Yeah, unless you want another one.
Not really.
Okay, thanks.
Well, we've
Matt.
Got a choice. We either do that or we can plug Jeff's thing. Let's
plug Jeff's thing.
Okay. Jeff's. Are you still? You're still touring, aren't you?
Oh, I always tour. Touring until the end of April. I'm in Crewe on Friday and Shrewsbury on Saturday. But yeah, the documentary.
Let's talk about the documentary though.
Hawking it.
Yeah. So this is you went out to find out if a degree is still worth it. Is university really worth it? Here's a clip.
And when I went to uni, it was a time to explore choices. You know, make mistakes, have fun. And now, proud dad myself, I've started thinking about what uni might be like for Jeff Jr. And from what I'm hearing, things ain't great.
Lecturers have been striking, and 69% of graduates feel their degree wasn't even worth it.
So I should be putting away a bit of money now so that Jeff Jr. can follow in my footsteps, but I also need a new motor. So I'm going to hit the road to find out where my money's best spent and start doing some research.
So what's the answer?
Well, first of all, I've got to say my son's name isn't Jeff Jr.
Well, I was going to ask that.
Thank the Lord for that.
There was just a tiny part of me that thought maybe he is, and it would be awkward if I thought that was funny.
Well, you know, the film, I mean, it's an hour long, and we're trying to get conversations going. But ultimately, I suppose I did come out of it sceptical about the value. Not saying that there's no value in going to university, but there's been some material things that have changed, you know. And I think most people intuitively will go, well, there used to be, in the 60s, there was 4% of people who had degrees. Now there's 40%. There's just more of it. I think when there's more of stuff, it has slightly less value than it did, which would all be well and good if it didn't cost so much. It costs so much now. And, you know, there's been things like grade inflation, which I found fascinating. Between 2010 and 2020, the amount of first doubled. Now, are we cynics? Or I know that students work very hard now, but do we think the amount of people capable of getting that truly doubled within the space of 10 years, or is there something else going on? And so I've had a lot of whistleblowers in touch since with me privately saying that it's worse than I thought.
It turns out me not going might be the right thing to do.
Did you not go to university? No. Yeah, well, I mean,
he never mentions it, you know.
So I'm going to talk about your book in a minute.
Well, that's one thing you always get. People have done well.
I could have been to university twice in the length of time it's taken you to write this thing.
That is very true.
Do you know, the two things you get is people that have done well.
You've got a PhD as well.
But people that have done well for themselves without going to university always want to tell you. And the other one that gets me is when someone's on Graham Norton and they tell you about a meeting with a careers advisor who told them they'd never be the best actor in the world. Yeah. You go, yeah, but they said that to about 10,000 people and they were right 9,999 times. But look, it's not just dumping on the higher education sector, well, not exclusively, but I think that in my sort of dream scenario, parents, grandparents will watch it and it will just open up a discussion with young people.
Well, it's fascinating. It's available on the iPlayer.
It's available on iPlayer right now.
Fabulous. Loads of people still on the YouTube channel, astonishingly. Somebody says Felicity Buckham sounds like a Tory MP in Midsummer Murders whose son bumped off the vicar. And Lorraine says Tim Googling women whips sounds decidedly not safe for work.
I'm so glad somebody else did that joke. I really am, because I went and then my brain said, no, it's live radio.
And that's it for PMQs for 3 weeks now. But next week, we're going to do one of our historic PMQs, looking back on a great session of PMQs from the past. If you want to nominate one, if you've got a session of PMQs you want us to pause the action, analyse in real time, email me matt@times.radio. Maybe we'll do that over the next couple of weeks. But for now, for me, Matt Chorley, it's goodbye.
Hi.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.